Welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is delighted to have with us two authors, Tosca Lee and Marcus Brotherton, who are going to talk about their new book, The Long March Home. Before we begin, I do want to let those tuning in know the Poison Pen does have copies of the book, and we would be happy to hold one for you or put it in the mail. Just give us a call at the Poison Pen or go online, and we can connect you with this truly amazing book. Now I'd like to welcome Tosca Lee and Marcus Brotherton.
Thank you so much for having us.
Great to be here.
Thank you for being here today. As a non-writer, I'm always fascinated by how writers got to where they were, because very rarely was it something that happened early on. It's usually a journey. So who was Tosca and who was Marcus before you became published authors? Why don't we start with you, Tosca?
I was dead set on becoming a classical ballerina, and that was my whole goal in life when I was young, and I pursued it very seriously until I was injured as a teen, and that injury set me back about a year. And I had always written, and I've always loved storytelling, and that's what I loved about ballet, is that you tell a story from the stage through your movements, not through words. Wow. And but after that happened, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to change course probably. So I went off to college. I went to, I'm from Nebraska, and I went to Smith College in Massachusetts. And I came home my freshman year and was talking in the car with my dad. And I was talking about some of my favorite books and how a great book is like a roller coaster. And I blurted out that day that I think I'd like to try to write a book. And so before that, it was ballet. It was, you know, change of course. But then that day, my dad changed my life when he said, "All right, Tosca, I'll make you a deal. I'll pay you what you would have made working at the bank this summer," which was going to be my summer job. Mm-hmm. "And if you write your first novel and write it full time and treat it like a job." And so that was 1989. And so I've been doing this now for a while.
And if I understand correctly, that first book was kind of your homage to the Clan of the Cave Bear.
Yes, actually, yes, you're right. So, and it got soundly rejected. It was about the Neolithic Stonehenge people. And it got soundly rejected by Writer's House, who I reached out to trying to find an agent, because I had made all the mistakes, including writing a 23-page synopsis, which is so cringeworthy and so awful. But they said it was, as they tore it apart and said, "This book is really bad," they said it is reminiscent of Clan of the Cave Bear, which was one of my favorite novels. And so that was enough to encourage me to go on.
That's great. Marcus, you had written something that I thought was fascinating about your childhood. You said you grew up with a dual influence of loving words and being encouraged to think big thoughts about the universe.
Yeah, my mother was a newspaper journalist, and my dad was a preacher. He was a Baptist minister for a number of years. And so it was just this combination of being immersed. My mom read me books when I was little, like all the classics, and I just really grew up loving books. So after my education, I joined the newspaper world, and I was a newspaper reporter for 5 years, and had sort of starry-eyed visions of being, you know, sort of an great newspaper guy. But it was right when the industry, the newspaper industry, was going downhill. Everything was going online, and publishers were really trying to figure out how to make a business model work. So I would go to apply for the next job up the ranks, and there would be 100 applicants, literally, and you know, 99 of them would have been just laid off times. It was just a very steep climb in industry struggling to figure itself out. So along the way, I started a side business editing books, and that business grew to overtake my newspaper work, and I went full-time into books in 2005. So I'm writing, collaborative writing, editing books, dating Taylor Swift. I mean, it's all the same. So that's my business today.
Well, that brings us to your new collaboration, The Long March Home. What can you tell those tuning in about the book? And I'll let you both contribute to that.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about what the story is. The story is, and you can see it right here, it's about three best friends, the main character, Jimmy Propfield, and Hank and Billy. And they enlist in the Army in 1941 and are stationed in Manila, which seems like paradise at the time. And life is great until the morning of December 8th, 1941. Because the Philippines was bombed within 10 hours of Pearl Harbor being bombed. And so these three best friends are plunged into war. And it's about their fight to survive and their fight to try to get home together. And it's about their plight in the Philippines through those months of war, through the Bataan Death March, and through POW life. And so that is what the story is about. Marcus can give us more background about it because the story actually started with him.
Oh, okay.
It started way back in probably 2006, 2007. And just to give some context to this, I do a lot of nonfiction work. And I had helped Lieutenant Buck Compton write his memoirs. And Lieutenant Compton was one of the original Band of Brothers. He had parachuted into Normandy on D-Day, fought all through World War II. So after Buck's book came out, he was 85, 86 years old. He was still speaking all over the country. And his daughter asked me if I want to be his traveling companion, needed some help by then to navigate airports and whatnot. So I jumped at the chance. And Buck and I just became great friends. And he had a very clear mind right up to the end. One day we were sitting in an airport lounge, and you can imagine this hulking World War II vet, a very, very large man, Compton. Just physically strong. He was talking about how he had spent time in Bastogne, and this was a kind of a winter hell, just outgunned, outmanned, not enough food, not enough supplies, not enough winter clothes, and he's getting shot at by the enemy. Mm-hmm. And I remarked something casually, like, "Wow, that just must have been so difficult in Bastogne." And he goes, "Yeah, Marcus, it was hard, but at least I wasn't fighting in the Pacific. Man, those guys had it rough." So that was the context. That was the big story question that stayed lodged in my mind and made me investigate. What was Lieutenant Compton talking about? How difficult was it in the Pacific? A couple years later, I did an oral history project with Adam Makos, and we interviewed real-life veterans who had fought in the Pacific and found out firsthand, okay, this is what it really is. I love oral history. The challenge with oral history is that it's not terribly immersive. I mean, it's just kind of a guy telling a story. So I wanted to create that immersive environment for the reader, to just plunge the reader into the heart of the action. And that's what began this process of the Long March Home. It was a back burner project for me at the start. It was unfunded. I worked on it for 7 years, just kind of off and on. And at the end of that time, I had a good working manuscript, but there was some things that it just weren't quite working yet. I talked to my agent about it. He said, "Yeah, you're trying to do too much. Why don't you get a collaborative writer? And you're too close to the canvas. And this collaborative writer can help you step back, you know, cut out sections that need to be or straighten things out." So that's when I called Tosca, and so what began this collaborative process.
Yeah. So she kind of brought the fiction writing skills while you brought the nonfiction writing skills, and together it turned into the book.
Yes, but also I should note that the way that I knew Marcus is because I had endorsed a novel of his several years before. So I would say Marcus is probably best known for his nonfiction, but I knew him for his previous novel, Feast for Thieves.
Oh, that was your first book, wasn't it, Marcus?
First novel, yeah. I had done a lot of nonfiction at the time, but you know, we all dream of writing the great American novel, and fiction writing is a steep climb. It's very competitive, and so yeah, I love it. Very difficult.
What I found amazing about the book was I really didn't know much about. We tend, at least I think, a lot of readers know about the Western Front, about the war in Europe. The war in the Pacific is kind of a little bit more gauzy or out of focus, but you really brought into focus how devastating it was. I had no idea that the day after Pearl Harbor, the Philippines were bombed, and it was almost, if not more, horrific than what happened in Hawaii.
It was absolutely horrific because And it was a situation where for those months that followed until April, the Allied soldiers were outnumbered and out-provisioned and outgunned, and they were ended up cut down to half rations and quarter rations, and then they were starving, and then they had not enough medicine even when they got malaria or dysentery, and so it was just a really horrible situation.
Yeah. How did you? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Pacific side of things, it's I want to say it's a bloodier conflict, although at the same time, it's hard to sort of compare apples to apples when you're talking about the Holocaust or what happened in Europe. Yes, atrocities happened, horrible atrocities happened in Europe. I think the Pacific, it was against a different enemy with a different worldview. And so the concept of mercy, for instance, was very difficult to Imperial Japanese mindset. And as the Allied troops were fighting against Imperial Japan, as Tosca said, they got beaten initially. Initially, it was a huge devastating loss. So all of these Allied troops surrendered, and in the Imperial Japanese mind, well, that was horrible. You never surrendered. You would literally kill yourself before you surrendered. And so these Allied prisoners were treated very, very horribly, and just some of the atrocities that happened are so different.
You adopted a dual timeline format for the story, so we are immersed in that kind of war scene, but we also learn more about your four characters. Prior to that, what inspired you to decide we need to see more about them before they went to war?
I think the nice thing about that dual timeline, so it's about every fourth chapter, we step back into the late 20s and mostly the 30s, and to watch these best friends grow up. And it's not just the three boys in that scenario, it's also their fourth best friend, who is Claire and who was Jimmy's love interest. And it serves a dual purpose. One is that it gives us a reprieve from what's going on with the war, because it's so much heaviness, and it's war, heavy. And so to be able to step back into the nostalgia of this simpler time and watch these friends come of age and do the silly things that kids do as they're growing up, and it is a nice reprieve, I think, for the reader. But it also serves the purpose of raising the stakes as well, because now that we're more vested in these characters and we've seen them grow up and we've seen them enlist, now that they're kids, they enlisted at 17, 18, and 19. One of them lied about his age. And so now the stakes actually become higher for the reader, because they know these characters now. And so now they must survive.
In the book, one of the things that I learned, I always love learning new things, was that the Filipino people actually were not passive in the face of the Japanese aggression. There were people who were fighting it as guerrillas, and you actually introduce a character who's based on a real historical figure. Can you talk about her a little bit?
Lipa Kalala, a fascinating find deep in research, came across this female guerrilla fighter. A real person, and we learned that she wasn't the only one. Kind of with the men fighting or the men incarcerated, the women of the Philippines rose up. And Felipe, a fascinating character who kind of roamed around the countryside and waged a war in various clandestine ways. Historically, she was actually didn't make it to the end of the war. She was her own troops accused her of financial impropriety. She was executed at the end of the war. But I love this character, this strong female character, just, going to work and saying, okay, out of my country.
She's great. The book has got many different themes running through it, but one of them, it's sacrifice, what we would do for our family, for our friends, for our country. Why was that such an important, it's World War II, so of course it's an important theme, but why did that speak to you both as writers?
You know, one of the things that really stood out to me when, in reading the survivor accounts, and we combed through a lot of survivor accounts, and in fact, all the things that happened to these main characters really happened to somebody. And so we've quilted together their experiences from the true accounts. But one of the things that really stood out to me is the fact that over and over, survivors would say those who got through it were ones that had friends. And so there's this kind of theme of brotherhood and looking out for one another, because those are the ones who made it through, and so many didn't. But you stood a better chance if you had a friend like that.
Sometimes people ask us, you know, why are you writing about war? Are you trying to shine a spotlight on war? Are you trying to glorify war? And it's the exact opposite of that. We write about history so we don't forget it. We want people to know, okay, things like this really did happen, and they're horrible. Let's solve conflicts in our modern world without fighting each other. At the same time, as we're writing against this negative backdrop, we want to surface these heroics that come from that. Take ordinary people, you put them in extraordinary circumstances, and what comes to the surface? Well, people can be very generous, very benevolent, very self-sacrificing. Greater love hath no man than that he lay down his life for his friends. And this is the theme that comes out through these horrific experiences.
What I also appreciated as a reader was you don't portray World War II in your book as a black and white thing. There's different shades of gray. The war was not always clear cut as to who was the good guy, who was the bad guy. You had to make decisions based on your situations. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think that was a really important part of the main character's journey. So the main character, Jimmy, is the son of a pastor, and he's actually expected to go off to seminary and follow in his father's footsteps. And the way that he grows up, his life is very, very black and white. It's very, there's good and there's bad. There's no in between. But when he's involved in the war, in the fog of war, there's no black and white. There's so much gray. There's so much in between. Is it okay to kill in this circumstance? Is it okay to kill in this one? Is it okay if you're defending somebody or protecting someone, or, you know, and so all the things that would be completely wrong in everyday life get turned upside down. And in fact, their whole existence is turned upside down, because one thing that came through the survivor accounts is that as POWs later on, when they were in the prison camps, the thing that would get them through the day that would save their life one day was the rules were completely different the next day. So there was no consistency. And so we ended up showing this journey away from black and white, simple black and white, to this, you know, this ambiguity and also this idea that, you know, at the end of the day, we've all done these horrible things on some level or another.
How was the project like working together? Because I know for some writers, it's a very solitary kind of thing. They like to be in control. But when you're working with another writer, you sometimes have to give up some control. Was it a happy partnership? Would you admit that on camera?
We would get that on camera, yes. It was, and Tosca's the quickest writer I know.
I am not. I used to be, but I was
great. I think we each came to the table with a set of non-negotiables, and certainly we had conversations. Nothing ever got heated. Things got intense a few times where we went, you know, this scene or this character or this one line or this one word, I really feel strongly about it, and here's why. But we're making cases for things. But also there was a lot of give and take and a lot of challenging assumptions about what we had on paper. Okay, this works, but can we beat it? I think we went through 50 titles just like that.
Wow.
It was great moments, a lot of back and forth. Tosca worked on it for another 5 years. That's the joke behind, you know, Tosca's quickest writer.
Marcus was so giving and so open-handed about the project that when I came onto it, he passed off a bunch of materials to me, but then, you know, COVID hit and all this, and I basically shut down creatively. So I added 5 years to the process. So this is a 12-year project here. Go ahead, Marcus. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's great. Yeah. And Tosca was great about really going, okay, let's get this right. And so she sort of double checked everything that I had done, not only to double check it, but also to immerse herself in the history as well. Sometimes people say, okay, Marcus was the researcher and Tosca was the lyricist here. But it was really a collaborative. Tosca is just as good a researcher as anybody here. And so once we got a kind of a good working manuscript that was all sort of straightened out, then we went to go back and forth on it to get it into one consistent voice. And that was in many ways the intense part, but also the fun part. We're working, we had a contract by then, we're working deadlines. And when, you know, when it's 2:30 in the morning, a deadline is looming, everybody gets a little kind of like funny. And so that was definitely some good times there.
It's really nice when you have edits and stuff like that. And if somebody's, you know, really under pressure with something else going on, project, family, whatever, to be able to say, you know what, can you handle those changes? Can you take care? It's just, it's a luxury you don't have when you're writing by yourself.
That's true. Let's talk a little bit about, you both have been writing for a number of years. What have you learned about publishing, about the business of writing, that if you could go back in time, you would tell yourself when you were first starting out? What advice would you give yourself?
One of the things I would tell myself is, while you're waiting to publish that first one, keep writing your next and your next and your next. It's easy to sit around and just wait. But I look back and I'm like, gosh, you know, I did start some other books and they did become published novels of mine, but I could have done a lot more. So I always, that's the advice I give other writers, is while you're waiting to get the first one published, or whether you're publishing it on your own, you could be working on the next and the next.
I like to tell prospective writers, particularly when they're interested in commercial publishing, kind of a dual truth. One, it's difficult, and two, it can be done. And it helps to know both truths. When it's when you've been working on a draft for 7 years and you're frustrated, well, remember, okay, it's difficult. It's a steep climb, particularly in fiction. You really have to bring your A game, probably your A-plus game, because it's just so competitive. It is difficult, but it can be done. Plugging away, keep reading those books, keep going to writing conferences. If we can do it, we can do it too, so.
Yeah, one of the things that I discovered that you had mentioned, Tosca, that I thought was particularly insightful was, you said people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And that's mm-hmm. from Maya Angelou. You said the secret is simple, make them feel in writing.
Yeah, make them feel. Because that's, you know, when it comes to fiction especially, that's, we read to be transported and we read to feel something. And that's it, that at the end of the day. And when I teach writing, which I do often, you know, I always say, lead with your storytelling. The writing needs to be good. It doesn't have to be perfect, but you really have to be able to evoke emotion. So, yeah.
We have people who write us and have read the book and they say, I was so angry here, or I laughed out loud here, or I sobbed like a baby. And that's good. That powerful emotional experience, that's definitely what we're trying to offer the reader.
Yeah, it's definitely an emotional roller coaster, I will say that, for readers. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about both of you as readers, because you've both written a number of historical fiction. The Long March Home is a historical novel. Is that your passion as readers, or are you kind of more all over the map as readers?
I'm all over the map myself. I love historical. I do read it quite a bit. But I'm also a board member of International Thriller Writers. And so I have a foot in the thriller writing community, and I have written thrillers and suspense. So that's something else I really enjoy.
Great.
I'm all over the map as well. Although what I'm working in a specific genre, I like to read sort of extensively around it and through it, and you know, what are the comparable titles, and I want to see what they're doing. So,
That's great. Now, the next question you're free to answer or not, because I know some authors are protective of their works in progress, but would you like to tell those listening in what's coming next, possibly from you as an author?
I'm writing a medieval thriller right now.
Wow.
So it is historical. It combines the two. So it's historical and it's paced as a thriller, and it's about the European witch hunts.
It happens. So kind of meeting
I just,
both.
yeah.
yeah. And what's the title of that catastrophe? Can you tell readers?
Witch Hammer. Yeah.
Good, that's great.
I just finished a collaborative book that by contract I can't yet disclose who I wrote with until it comes out, but it's a celebrity who's done a lot of work with veterans in the USO and local citizens.
Do you find writing, switching between nonfiction and fiction, kind of refreshes you as a writer? Is one tug at you more?
My bread and butter has been nonfiction, and I really enjoy it. If we can get a good narrative, flowing story out of nonfiction, boy, that really sings. At the same time, fiction is just this big blank canvas. I mean, create everything, create the story world from the ground up, bring to life characters. So I have a healthy respect for both. I've been probably more successful in nonfiction just because I do it more, but I love fiction, so.
Let's go back just for a moment to Long March Home. The book is now done. It's out in readers' hands in the libraries and bookstores. What surprised you the most about writing this book?
One of the things that surprised me is the feedback from readers, actually. There's been quite a few readers who have written to us to say, my father, my grandfather, my uncle served in the Philippines and they never spoke about their experiences, and now I know why. And that is the truth. So many of these soldiers returned home and couldn't or wouldn't talk about it.
We really wanted to get this book right, and it felt imperative to us. We wanted to honor the veterans who were truly there, and so it was, 12 years of going, can we beat whatever we have on paper? The surprising thing, I guess the pleasing thing, is that when the trade reviews came back, Library Journal, Publishers Weekly, and Booklist all gave it a star review, which is almost unheard of in the
Yeah.
book. It was satisfying, very gratifying. This book is working, and hopefully that larger goal of honoring veterans who are there is really coming.
Think you both did them proud with the book. Before we're almost out of time, but I do have to ask Tosca, because I could not believe when I read this, you actually did a segment for another, I'm guessing, website or podcast about the best war movies for date night. I'm thinking, really? War movies on date night.
It was for the Real Hist Real REEL History podcast. Yes. Yeah. So it began talking about the Bataan Death March in movies. So that was kind of the historical segment of, how this, what Marcus and I just wrote about, is portrayed in movies, or has been. There haven't been any real recent ones, but then segued into the best war movies for date night. Which was really kind of fun because I like a good war movie myself, but
What is your
yeah.
top pick?
My top, oh gosh, there were so many. I mean, one of the movies, I'm not your probably typical date night movie goer though. I really like movies like Hacksaw Ridge, and
Oh, good heavens.
then I like Apocalypse Now and stuff like that. So not really romantic maybe, but
Well, if it works for you, that's
to each
okay.
their own, I suppose.
How can readers learn more about you and your books? Do you have websites? Are you on social media? What can you tell them to get to?
You can find me at toscalee.com, and I am on social media, though my dog is more popular than I am there. So if you really like dogs, you can go to my social media.
Find me at marcusbrotherton.com, and yeah, most social media I'm on or should be on. So, yeah.
That's great. I can't believe how quickly our time has flown by. The Poison Pen has been honored to have with us authors Marcus Brotherton and Tosca Lee, whose new book is The Long Way Home. I'd like to thank them both for taking Long March Home. I'm sorry, I got your book wrong. Long March Home. I'd like to thank them both for taking time to visit with us and share their thoughts. And for those tuning in, thank you for joining another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.